So here we are on the 12th day of Christmas, Epiphany, the day of ahas. And I have a confession for you, which is that I love words. You may know that already. I love individual words like epiphany, like what a great word that is, or grace. A word like ineffable or delicious, which sounds just like what it describes. Words are a little like music. Even aside from their meaning, they carry a tune, and when they're paired with each other, they can be even more melodic. Words from poems like Emily Dickinson's, like, "I dwell in possibility." How great is that? Or, "Pardon my sanity in an insane world." Right? Or Robert Frost's invitation, "Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth." What an invitation. It feels you're just there. You're just in this place. In both Dickinson and Frost, we see the breadth of possibility, which is, of course, and not coincidentally, our theme for the month, possibility. And today's title, A Quietly Audacious Journey, is a collection of words that stuck with me that came from the writer Alain de Botton, from an interview with Krista Tippett, which might not surprise you, since I often reference her. I don't think she is specifically listed as one of the sources of our living tradition, though I suspect many of the people she interviews could be. They were talking about love in this particular interview. De Botton has written about it from a very young age. He suggests that a wiser culture than ours would not be so focused on the high point of love, the romantic moment, but recognize that step as the first in what he calls a far longer, more ambivalent, and yet quietly audacious journey. A wiser culture than ours would know love to be a longer and more ambivalent, quietly audacious journey. I love that phrase, and it feels like such a great phrase for the experience of love. Love of a person or another creature or a tree or the mountains, whatever calls your heart. The point is the journey, not the peak. The quietly audacious journey. I have been carrying that phrase around with me for months, and I saved it for today because even when I first heard it, it made me think of the wise men from the book of Matthew. The wise men made a choice for love over power, remember? When they chose to go home as opposed to going back to Herod. I wonder if you remember it before you heard it this morning. Maybe from the hymn, "We Three Kings of Orient Are," right? The book of Matthew is the only gospel that the Magi are found in, and it's not a long segment, as I mentioned to the children this morning. It's a small little piece, but they play a significant role because Herod has heard that this baby has been born that he imagines will challenge his authority. He doesn't know where the child is exactly. We think that this is probably long after the birth of the child, even after the time when the shepherds were called to follow the star, as Ruth reminded us this morning. That story is in Luke, where similarly a star guides them, guides the shepherds. But the Magi story happens later when Mary and Joseph have likely left Bethlehem. There is a small detail about the fact that the Magi found them in a home, for example, as opposed to the manger. So Herod sends these wise people out to find this baby, this king of the Jews, and instructs them to come back and let him know where the baby is so he can take care of it. These are the actions of a leader perhaps feeling threatened. Fake baby. Not a king. I'm the king. Now we can imagine it is possible the wise men won't find the child, right? When we hear the beginning of the story, they're after all following a star. Or it's possible they will find him and they'll go back and tell Herod. But ultimately, that's not the story we find in the book. The story is that they found him following the star. So we think they may have been Zoroastrians who were known for their ability as astrologers, for example. We don't actually know how many wise people there were because the story only mentions three gifts. So we imagine three gifts, three wise men. So they brought the gifts, the gold, the frankincense, and myrrh. And then what happens? They were transformed. They were awestruck. What is it? So much so that they decided not to return to Herod, but instead to return home to their respective lands on their, let us imagine, quietly audacious journeys. And what makes it that way? What do we imagine? I don't imagine wise men bouncing home on their camels loudly with horns blowing and party favors. No, their choice lived in their hearts. We can almost see them smiling quietly on their way home, doing their thing without having to announce it. In fact, perhaps not wanting to draw attention to it. So it changes the story, doesn't it? If they had gone back to report the baby's whereabouts, Herod would have known, and the baby likely would not have survived his wrath. We know that Herod killed his wife and his mother and his sons out of paranoia, eschewing the wisdom of all those around him. So it seems likely that would have been the end of things. But something happened to these travelers, and they changed their course. They went home, and the baby survived. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood. And sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. So I wondered when I was thinking about this how long they waited before deciding and what exactly prompted them in that direction. The text says, having been warned, they returned to their own country by a different route. They chose their own path in lieu of the one they were directed to choose. A little break. What did the traffic light say to the car? Don't look, I'm changing. Back to the story. Sometimes we need a little exhale, you know, we have to like take a break. So I am not a biblical scholar, but I do think there is wisdom in some of the stories, particularly the ones that I think are actively, if quietly, in our midst, but maybe don't get as much attention because it feels like maybe something lingers of them in the back of our minds, in the choices they offer us in our own lives. Some of these stories have been in our midst for a long time, even when they're not actively working on us, even when we're not actively aware. Oifi's story this morning of taking gifts to a child born into a family she didn't know. We could imagine it was simply a thoughtful thing to do, and it was. And it has resonance, doesn't it? A resonance of care, of connection that was intentional, that was a choice to engage rather than be distracted by the rest of her life. And it begs the question, what does the story of the wise men and their audacious journey say to each of us? Perhaps that we get to choose to respond to an invitation to be bigger than small. Maybe this story reminds us that we get to choose to protect the idea of love alive in the world, when it so often seems wanting. We get to choose to focus on that light rather than the darkness. Maybe what it says is we can listen when we hear, "Sweet cakes, what I'm telling you is yes, yes, yes. Be the fullness of your very best inclinations." So it seems to me, and you may already have imagined, that we've got a little Herod thing going on in our own leadership these days. A personality in power that we can imagine suffers paranoia, someone who practices getting out ahead of an issue or a person by targeting and belittling. A person who practices distinction and difference rather than common cause, that seeks to protect authority by abusing it. We know this is not a solo act, that it is just the most obvious one among us. And we observe people who appear to be traveling in the Magi's shoes, who have been told to find the one or ones who threaten the kingdom. And the reality is the present-day Magi do have to choose. We all have to choose, as the wise men did. In the book of Luke, during the time of the ministry of this baby now grown, Jesus suggests, "No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." In truth, I think everything on this planet and in our lives comes down to this point. I encourage us not to be too literal here. God can represent many things: love, compassion, generosity, the voice that calls you sweet cakes and reminds you of yes. Money, on the other hand, also represents many things, not just cash, but power or the illusion of control, the presence or the pretense of security. We spend a lot of time paying attention to those things. But ultimately and often, two roads diverge in a yellow wood. There are two roads, two possible journeys, and we don't get to travel both. And like the wise men, we have to choose. We humans appear to devote ourselves to one or the other of these mutually exclusive priorities. So we have the chance to listen to the voice that says to us, yes, be the fullness of your loving best self. Be melodramatic, wear nail polish, don't wear nail polish. Paragraph your letters or not, those don't matter. Travel a quietly audacious journey, not one that you are boasting about or crowing to make known, but one that is the true spirit of connection and kindness that is available to all of us. I'm a huge proponent of both, and that probably doesn't surprise you. I rarely say but at the end of a sentence. Still, in this arena, I think we are required to choose a priority. The wise men could not both protect the baby, the symbol of love incarnate, and return to the house of power. Nor can we. And I'm not saying that money itself is bad. It is necessary, we know that. It's that the commitment to it or the prioritizing of wealth over connection will isolate and divest us from what is of greatest value in our lives, that spirit that goes like this, that puts us together, that sparkles and shines between and among and within us each, not selectively each, but every each. It is an audacious choice to put that spirit before self or the illusion of safety. It is a humble and a quiet choice. And now that you have heard it, I'm wondering and guessing if you will hear it over and over as you go forward. You know how that happens when we hear things and suddenly we become aware and we notice it everywhere. The God choice or the goddess choice, the spirit choice, is the voice that affirms you as it affirms the human and inherent dignity of all others. It doesn't protect us from life's challenges, which is why it is an audacious choice, because it is not easy. It is not so loud as to attract attention to itself, but bold enough to be the resistance to competition, to quantification, to judgment, to exclusivity. Our Magi chose to take their newfound knowledge home, to protect the reality of a big new love in the world right there in front of their eyes. I wonder how we each might express that choice in this new year, this 2019. And I'm hoping we have equal courage to keep finding the quietly audacious path that says love matters more than any resource we could earn or accumulate. Love matters more, and it will hold you and protect you better than all the other physical wealth you could imagine. Our task this year is to discern how we will keep living this truth together and sharing it with the world around us. We've already begun. We reach out, we're stretching, we're building, we're growing. But we dare not slow down because Herod wants his kingdom. Our commitment to the life of the Spirit that says yes to love must be stronger. Let's get on that. Let's keep on that, friends.